afternoon, and welcome to another episode of We the People Radio. My name is Aaron Ryan.
And I'm Bill Cundiff, and our sponsor this hour is Pape Machinery. They're our local John Deere Ag and Turf dealer. They're located up at 3119 Twinview Boulevard in the city of Shasta Lake. Go up and see them if you need a tractor, a mower, implements, repairs, parts. They do it all up there. Or give them a call. Their phone number is 226-9226. Or catch them on the web at papemachinery.com.
Yeah. So I thought free advertisement of the week should go to the Winco Deli today.
Winco Deli.
Winco Deli. Yeah. They're every week.
What have they done for you this recently?
They had turkey.
They had turkey.
And they had pea salad that wasn't all mushy.
There does seem to be a turkey shortage for some reason.
I know. Sometimes there's turkey and sometimes there isn't. But those guys, they do a really good job. And I should say, it's not guys. Mostly it's ladies. So Shiloh, she does a terrific job. And all of her helpers. So anyway, three cheers to the Winco Deli. And Shasta Pizza, of course. Yes. Now you know what we did last night. We had a really exciting night. Went to the grocery store and ate pizza. Love Shasta Pizza. I got to get their phone number, and we should tell people about that one, too. Yeah. We go to the one on Victor, just, you know, in case anybody's shopping.
Yeah, Victor and Hartnell?
Hartnell. Yeah, you walk in, order a pizza, and you're out of there in like 10 minutes. I never call it in. Just seems too lazy. Today, we are chatting with Ambassador Francis Rooney, and is he on? And he's on there. Nice. So he's. I like the. Sometimes the bio notes kind of make me chuckle. He's an American politician, as opposed to a politician from somewhere else, and a diplomat who was the U.S. representative for Florida's 19th congressional district. He served as the United States ambassador to the Holy See, that would be the Vatican, under George W. Bush from 2005 to 2008, and he's the chairman of Rooney Holdings Incorporated. He wrote a terrific book called The Global Vatican, where he gives a really good inside look into the church and how that fits with world politics and diplomacy. But today, I should have looked. What was the date on this article? Oh, my gosh, it was March. We've been going around and around trying to find, like, the perfect time to meet on a Sunday afternoon. Harder than it seems. But he wrote a terrific article. If Putin wants a Cold War, we should give him one. It's like,
Doesn't seem like it'd be that hard
the
at
end.
This point. Yeah.
So Ambassador Rooney, how's it going?
How are you doing?
In the great state of Florida? Yeah?
Yes.
Yeah.
Florida.
Florida. Yeah, well, it's, you know, we're having some snow and some all those things, so we're having whatever you're not having.
We're getting a lot of Californians out here now because of the taxes.
Yeah, that's true. You are getting some of our citizenry.
The number two guy at Oracle just bought a house three houses down from us in our neighborhood.
No kidding.
He had enough as well, huh?
Exactly. He's a very conservative guy. He said, I just couldn't take it anymore.
Yeah, see, that's unfortunately what kind of happens. And yeah, just throw in the towel and head for higher ground, I guess. I don't know.
Yeah. Well, there's no relief in sight in California either. There's nothing really happened in the last election to turn things around, and I think we're just going to continue to spiral out of control.
Well, until people finally have had, you know, I mean, it wasn't always like this.
No.
Before I moved here, it was pretty conservative. I feel kind of guilty. We lived in Washington State, and it's a dumpster fire.
California, you all are in, is totally different than the coastal elite.
That's true.
Oh, yeah.
That's true. We're way up here in the part where they mock us regularly, which, you know, I'm frankly good with.
Well, we actually had an economy. It was probably one of the largest economies in the world just here in California. And now they've pretty much destroyed that. We're in debt. We're
up here at this end, we were really self-sufficient because we had timber and mining, and we have a lot of natural resources up here.
A lot of water.
Here.
Yeah, we had a lot going for us.
Yeah, the state has seen fit to... to neck that down. They were celebrating for Thursday. They had one of their big coven meetings with the governor of California, the governor of Oregon, and the secretary of the interior. Oddly enough, they didn't invite the local congressman, Doug LaMalfa, but they did invite Jared Huffman from the coast. They sent us.
They need to pull in some Washington crazy too to make it a trifecta.
Yeah, I mean, they sent out this press release and to the local members of Congress that would be impacted by their dam removal dreams. They left off the location, 10 a.m. Siskiyou County, which is like the size of I don't know Rhode Island or something. And so anyway, they're planning on taking out 4 hydro dams.
I guess they don't like electricity.
No,
what are they going to do? Use fires?
Yeah. Well, that's the question on everybody's mind. They think they're going to have more water and more fish, but before the dams, they had less water and fewer fish. So,
I couldn't have gone to the meeting anyway. I was out getting my new mask fitted for when they do the next mask mandate, which I understand is coming.
Oh.
Yeah, so I wanted...
Did you do the leg waxing after that?
No, I got an appointment. They were backed up on that, so I couldn't get in.
We don't want to mislead people on what goes on here. Oh, my gosh. Well, leg waxing, that's a terrific segue to Putin.
William Manchester, who's written so many great books, wrote a great book called A World Lit Only by Fire. It's about the Middle Ages before fire, you know, existed when everything went dark and the sun went down. That's what they're looking for in California right now.
Well, honestly, we did have a guy, in all seriousness, we have had Jesus Arredondo on a few times, and what sparked me was his law partner called me at the office, and she said, do you realize that every, you know, in the course of conversation, it wasn't her opening line, but she said, every night when the sun goes down, she goes, I hold my breath. We're that close to having the grid implode. She said, as soon as all those solar... The people who have all put solar on their houses, but they have no battery backup. So the minute the sun goes down, all that solar stops, and everything that's currently powered with that solar hits the grid all at the same time.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Check out Manchester's book. It's a good book.
Okay. And tell me the name of it.
If the Hoover Dam and Glen Canyon Dam go out, Southern California's in a world of hurt.
Yeah.
With the lower water level.
They let... I don't know how much you guys deal with Bureau of Reclamation out where you are, but a lot of the big reclamation projects are in the West, and these guys, they're on a schedule. They've got a schedule. We've got to let all this water out for the fish. So regardless of the rainfall, regardless of the predictions for the year, and so they let all the water out, don't store any, and then, oh, wow, we're having a drought. Well, hell.
Well, it's good to protect fish over humans.
Yeah, absolutely. It's of paramount importance because fish are really the ones who are going to save us. They're the ones inventing everything. They're the big brain in the room.
Right. Mm-hmm. Yeah. Operating machinery.
Yep. Yep. You know. Building things. Yeah. It's really somewhat. It's kind of inexplicable. I wonder where they're planning on living when they've turned us back into the mouth breathing fire users.
Florida.
Have you all seen the latest thing in Maine about the lobsters?
No. My daughter lives in
Maine. Environmentalists want to stop lobster harvesting in Maine because they say that the tethers to the traps ensnare North American great white right whales. But
okay.
That's ridiculous. The freighters are what's killing off the whales, not the lobstermen.
That sounds pretty familiar.
Yeah, I heard something about that when Biden was having his great lobster feast there at the White House. He had some dignitaries there, and he's done nothing to really help them after promising he would. So,
well, it's
I don't think he coordinated with the environmentalists before he served lobster.
I'm thinking not.
Didn't they go on and on about the butter and all sorts of stuff? I mean,
that's news, yeah.
These guys are just, yeah. Well, at least it was a nice...
Can't beat having a senile president. It's too common.
Yeah, I don't know. And look at the people he picks. I mean, did you ever think you'd see an administration with, men wearing dresses and lipstick and high heels and... stealing luggage from the airport and, stuff like that.
Well, I really think that Obama's running the damn government, okay?
most of the executive branch employees are ex-Obama
radical
people. And so he's kind of the guy, like in The Godfather, the strings, you know. He's the guy back there pulling the strings.
Yeah, it's pretty interesting because if you look at it, people were, I mean, I was part of the Tea Party movement that started up when Obama came in, and all of a sudden we really started looking at what was going on at the federal level, and it's like, oh my gosh, this is a nightmare. And I look back on that, I'm like,
that was a bedtime story. That was child's play back then.
Yeah, not exactly nightmare material.
But to be fair, our Republicans, the first term I was in Congress, were equally complicit. We spent, Paul Ryan could not avoid spending money. They spent the same amount of money per day as Obama had.
Yeah.
Terrible stuff. I voted against all of that garbage. I mean, they had $500 million to bail out the mine workers' pension, $400 billion to bail out Puerto Rico. I mean, these are Republicans.
Yeah. There's no accounting for some of that, and it still goes on. And yet, I don't know. I always have to remind people that, you know, sometimes it sort of feels like they're electing each other, so it's this big inside club. But really, I mean, their districts are sending them there. What the heck?
I think the biggest problem is there's several problems. One is we need term limits.
Yeah, so the bureaucrats can run everything forever.
Less gerrymandered districts, so they have to fight it out with someone from the other party.
Yeah, that would be helpful.
In a primary, which radicalizes everybody, left and right. And then the third thing is we need more business people running for office.
Yeah.
I couldn't believe it when I got in there how few people knew anything about the economy, business, and hiring people, and what you have to do to build a business. They're just clueless.
Yeah, that part of it is a real killer, because if you've never had to make a payroll, if you've never had to do any of those things, you know, you start looking at it on a wider scale, and you're not going to fix anything. I guess you're not going to find solutions there.
Well, you don't know what to do.
Yeah,
because it's all about the government. I mean, even the Republicans who say they're not about government, that's all they know, because they haven't had a real job.
Yeah. Well, and so, you know, again, when people are looking at who their candidates are going to be, and they have a shot at the House every 2 years, for heaven's sakes. And yet, you know, out here, we got a cast of characters that's just shameful. Swalwell, Maxine Waters, Adam Schiff. I mean, after Swalwell's deal with Fang Fang, I figure, okay, finally, that's going to be too much for people. Nope.
Yeah, you've got some really strange ones out there. I am not aficionado of any of the people you just mentioned.
Oh, you don't even know. But, you know, again, they don't live near us. Those guys live in very small districts. Look at Barbara Lee. She's a total commie. She's right there in Oakland. She covers a very small bit of geography. Lots of people, but small geography. And then you look at what happens up here, and the member of Congress that covers our district is 11 counties.
Who is that?
That's Doug LaMalfa.
LaMalfa. He's a pretty good guy. I remember him.
Yeah.
He had a beard.
Yep.
I remember him.
He was going through the beard phase then. He was,
David Valadeo is a good guy.
Yeah.
In the valley.
But see, Valadeo is in a...
His family owns a huge dairy.
Yeah, they do. And he's in a tough district, too. He has to battle it out. You know, the one that's going to be fun to watch is I just lost it. The guy that's been fighting the Army Corps of Engineers forever. I'll think of it. Gosh, just like zipped out of my mind. Anyway, he's been crushed by the Army Corps of Engineers for years, years and years and years, and now he just won his election by like 600 votes. I think he's in the 13th district. I gotta look. Now he's going to be a member of Congress. Oops. So I think the Army Corps is going to have a different conversation with him. But I thought that was a terrific reason to run. He knows exactly what's been going on with the bureaucracy. So kind of nice. Let's see. Apparently, we have to probably take a little break. And we'll be right back. And then we'll actually stop spitballing it here. Or maybe we won't. I don't know. I like doing that. It's fun when you come on.
This old man and me were at the bar and we were having us some beers and swapping night on cares, talking politics, blonde and redhead chicks, old dogs and new tricks and habits we ain't kicked. We talked about God's grace, all the hell we raised. And then I heard the old man say, God is great, beer is good, and people are crazy.
Carly Simon and have her fix that song, because really what they want is your water, your money, your land. So the guy that I couldn't remember his name, I did remember what district he was running in, 13th Congressional in California, but his name is John Duarte.
Did he beat Barbara Lee?
No, that would be joyous. No, he's way out here in the valley. But narrowly defeated Assemblyman Adam Gray. So, I mean, and it was seriously less than 1,000 votes. He's a pistachio farmer. And when I first crossed paths with him, he was, I forget what he was doing, winter wheat or something. And they plowed a field that had been a field of farming, you know, it had been farmed forever. And when they plowed the field, it rained. Rain built up in the little furrows, and, you know, now it was wetlands and blah, blah, blah. All went downhill from there. But he has fought them forever. And so finally decided, you know what? I guess I'm going to run for Congress and see if I can get my hands on any of this and sort it out. Because even when a bill, I mean, Doug LaMalfa passed a bill that said that they were not allowed to regulate ongoing farming practices. And Army Corps looked at that and said, oh, that's not the way we read that. You know, the fines still stand. So, yeah, that's the kind of
great. Well, the Corps is kind of a life of its own.
Yeah, well, that's.
I dealt with the Corps a lot down here with the Everglades restoration projects and things like that.
Yeah, how'd that work?
Well, it worked out okay for me, but I had a few arguments going in my favor.
Yeah, very, very rarely does it go in our favor out here. Which is why we have so many fires. You know, between the Forest Service and all the ologists and all the agencies and all that. So that would be my one big argument against the term limit thing.
Do they not like fire breaks?
No, they don't, actually. Every single thing that happens out here gets sued by some environmental group thanks to the Equal Access to Justice Act. And so the agencies just don't do stuff because they know they're going to get sued. So most of the time they won't fight it. They'll just not do it.
Well, that's the Corps. The Corps doesn't like to get in the newspaper or get sued.
Nope, neither does the Forest Service.
My job here in Florida was to make sure that they could do what they needed to do for me, and nobody would know about it.
Yeah, well, that's cool. Yeah, ours doesn't work that slick yet. Maybe one day. I doubt it, though. It's a pretty big machine, and the guy that was our Region 5 forester for the Forest Service, he's now chief of the forest. So the guy we tried to get rid of for like 8 years. Yeah, now he's in charge of the whole country, so that's kind of how that's working out. It's a very different game out here. So swerve over to all this stuff with Putin. Why? I mean, is anybody actually opposing having a little Cold War with him?
I don't think so.
I mean, do we have to sell that very hard?
There are different levels of willingness to impose hardships on different countries' own people, like Germany with their energy and things like that. But they've come along a fair bit, and the more we can hurt the economy of Russia, and cut off goods and services to the economy of Russia, the better off we are.
So what do you think about the funding for Ukraine? Where are you kind of, where would you come down on that?
I think that we need to continue to help them. I don't think we should sell them armaments that can go into Russia. I think we need to offer Russia a way out of this thing, which is, look, we haven't given them armaments that will go into Russia. And if you'll come to the table, we can maybe agree not to allow Ukraine into NATO or the EU or whatever for a period of time, and maybe have a standoff where Putin can win something and move on.
Yeah, I people are starting to look at the price tag on this whole thing with Ukraine and just sort of, and you look what's going on in the country and you think, well, how much money do we need to give these guys?
Well, I don't think they'd have a problem giving Ukraine money and arms if they could be accountable. But I think there's a accounting problem with that. Wouldn't you agree?
Well, the Ukraine's been very corrupt. There's no doubt about it. That's why Trump held up those Javelin sales for 2 years until they could kind of sort out the graft and corruption at their borders. But I would argue that if we let Putin win there, the price will be a lot higher for us down the road. Because he's already said what he wants to do. He wants to take a lot of other countries. He wants to build back the Iron Curtain. And this is the beachhead that we have to stop him at.
Yeah. Well, do you see it going anywhere? I mean, what's the...
Well, I mean, I think that if Ukraine can continue doing what they're doing, it's kind of a contest of attrition here. Who's going to wear out first?
Yeah. Yeah, who's going to kill off all their people?
Putin would just as soon kill every Ukrainian and go in and have a country with no people. That would suit him just fine. All he wants is the territory.
Yeah. And do you think there's a point where he would stop? I mean, just looking at, you know, personality and that whole thing. I mean, is he the kind of guy who would pull the plug? Because I don't think he would.
No, I don't think he'll stop unless we come up with some way for him to have a way out where he gets some kind of victory. He's going to keep fighting. He doesn't care about his people or the Ukrainians. He'll keep chewing them up. And that is, by the way, a problem with all these authoritarian rulers. They don't respect their people, and they will use them. Hitler used them. Stalin used them. This guy will use them.
What about the funding? I mean, I think some of the European nations are you know, with oil sales and whatnot, can we do anything there as far as cutting back on his funding? I think that would tap him a little bit to find a way out.
Well, if it was up to me, I would just say no Russian oil sold in Europe, not at 60 euros, not at nothing. I'd
right.
say hell with you.
Yeah.
Go sell your oil to the Japanese and the Chinese and the Indians, or basically Chinese and Indians and Iranians. Forget it. And I think that the best lever that we have is to cut them off from Western goods, kill off their oligarchs, take all their properties, and make them feel the pain for his outrageous behavior.
Yeah.
So if you're a rich Russian and you've been driving around in a Chevrolet or a Mercedes, how are you going to like going back to a Lada?
Yeah. Well, I understand a lot of the oligarchs are getting kind of bumped off when they disagree with him. Is that truth to that?
There's been some of that. And so what?
Yeah.
Whichever way we lose them, I don't care if they get bumped off or if we take all
the votes. Wait a minute, you're the ambassador to the Vatican. Does the Pope know you talk like that?
Well, the Pope is a bit of a different problem, okay? I mean, he first came out and brought into this mantra that because we expanded NATO, we were complicit in making Putin feel at risk. And that's totally ridiculous. And I wrote an op-ed about it.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah,
he's trying to walk it back now, the Pope is.
Oh, is he?
Yeah.
He's pretty quiet about it. It's a quiet walk.
Yeah, but he's been saying things like, well, you know, Putin's a, you know, Russia. He won't say Putin directly, but he says Russia is an aggressor and whatnot.
Huh. Yeah, I don't know. It just seems like this thing, we're at that part where it has no beginning, no end, no highs, no lows. It's just one big long, you know.
Yeah. From a Vatican point of view, we would have been much better off to have a Pope Benedict who would have lashed out at this guy for what he was from day one.
You think he would have done that?
Oh, yeah. He did it a lot. He did it with Kabila in the Congo. He did it with Ahmadinejad. He did it in Nicaragua. You know, the whole bit.
When you were doing the ambassador job, was it what you thought it would be?
Well, I really didn't know what it was going to be. I mean, the State Department tries to prepare you for the issues that are involved, but until you get over there and hear from them, you don't really know what they're thinking. No, it was great because, as the Pope told me, we want to work with the Western world to make the world a safer place. And that means saying some hard things in countries that have bad governments. Mm-hmm. And he was willing to do that. Nicaragua, Congo, Iran,
yeah, Ethiopia. And that's all kind of stopped. He's pretty, they're pretty quiet about it now. They I don't know. Yeah. Seem to
This guy here is not really focused on the global diplomacy. I don't know what he's focused on.
He's been pretty quiet. I guess when he was speaking out, I was kind of like, "Oh, please shut up!" And then he did. Now it's like he's kind of a non-player on the world stage. And honestly, I know we've talked to you about this before, but the Pope has a really great opportunity to be a player on the world stage, a powerful player.
Of course, but this guy didn't seem to get it. And when he did speak up, he spoke up and fumbled. Okay, like the thing about Putin and NATO.
Yeah,
and I don't think his mindset is about global nation building and diplomacy. I think his mindset is like poor people in Argentina.
Yeah, you know, I was just going to say, it seems to be focused on you know, everybody needs more and you people have too much and just the whole socialist thing.
It's the whole liberation theology. Us Western world types have too much and we should give it all to some people who don't.
And do you think that comes from him or does that come from his advisors?
Both. I mean, he spent his life riding on a bus in Argentina. You know, if you read Father Gustavo Gutierrez's book about liberation theology, it is not nearly as political as it's been turned into by these liberal priests. He was talking about helping poor people and trying to liberate them from their poverty. It wasn't political at all. But it's been turned into like a political movement that the Western world owes them, that kind of thing.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
He's a professor at Notre Dame, Father Gutierrez.
Oh, okay. And where is, you know, I was thinking about it yesterday, Pope Benedict retired. We've never had one, Pope retire that I know of.
No. And does Gregory the 12th or something like that.
Yeah, not somebody who would impact us. So where is he? And do you have any?
He's living on the Vatican Gardens in a place called the Ethiopian College, which is a 4 or 5 story apartment house that some ex Vatican people live in. And Kathleen and I and the kids went over to see him. I went over to talk to the diplomatic corps about my book, The Global Vatican. And so I wrote the Pope and I said, "Hey, we're coming over to talk about the book. You have time to visit us?" And so he wrote back and said, "Of course." So we went over and met with him. Had a great visit.
Yeah.
Oh, that's
back
fun.
2012 or something. Huh. He looked great. He was so relieved not to be Pope.
that's gotta be just a huge responsibility and undertaking for anybody. But he had to know what he was getting into.
Yeah, but his health wasn't very good. I mean, none of these guys. Pope John Paul was an exercise nut. He used to go mountain climbing and skiing and all that kind of stuff. But by and large, most of these guys don't ever get any exercise in their whole life.
Yeah, that's true. And he was really, really active. He would have been, it would have been interesting to see him operate in the theater of today, I think.
Oh, yeah. John Paul?
Yeah.
He would be going after Russia like crazy.
Yeah.
He couldn't stand those guys.
Yeah, he would have been, I think, very vocal, and he would have been he would have insinuated himself as a major player in that that whole thing. So who else over there do you think has a lot of influence that maybe we don't hear about that much?
Well, I think Cardinal Parolin, the Secretary of State, has a lot of influence, but I think he's kind of muffled by the Pope's lack of interest in foreign policy engagement. But if he would let Cardinal Parolin engage, he's a really smart guy. He does understand the world.
Yeah. And what, as far as Putin goes, what do you think he wants to see, or what could we influence him to do to put an end to this? Is there anything that, I mean, reasonable that we could do that would kind of bring an end to this?
Well, the only thing I've really thought about that would be acceptable to us would be, we say, okay, you keep Crimea, and we will agree not to let the Ukraine in NATO or EU, and you leave. You leave the whole eastern side of the Donbass and all that stuff.
Yeah, because that's his biggest fear, I think, is Ukraine joining NATO, isn't it?
Yeah. Now, it would be nice to get Crimea back, too, and I don't think Zelensky will ever quit fighting unless we go beyond Zelensky and have the Western countries, France, Germany, us, UK, Spain, whatever, meet with Putin directly.
Yeah.
You're not going to get there with Zelensky.
No, he's not going to give an inch.
Well, he wouldn't be a rock star anymore. He wouldn't be getting, you know, he wouldn't have as much power. He'd just be a guy in a relatively small country. Why do you think it is that they're just ignoring the fact that he's cutting off the media, cutting off, you know, political parties, you know, the money's not really being audited? What's your guess on why he's getting away with that?
I think we're probably giving him too much sway there. I would like to see a little more aggressive American government dealing with him, saying, okay, you want more weapons? Talk to us about what you're doing.
Mm-hmm.
And I will say, Donald Trump did that. Donald Trump did not give them the javelins for 2 years until they theoretically improved on their corruption on the border, although I'm not really sure they did. I mean, that's kind of a cultural issue.
How many of these weapons that we're shipping over there do you think are really ending up in other folks' hands?
No, I think they're ending up in the right hands. It's just how much money trades hands to get them there.
Hmm. Yeah, because I was listening to some stories here not too long ago where there was quite a black market on a lot of the weapons that we were supplying. I don't know if there's any truth to that, but if that's the case, I think there definitely needs to be an audit, and maybe that's why you know, they're not too keen to that idea.
Well, I hope not. I haven't seen any weapons deployed by anybody that, other than us and the Ukrainians, other than the Ukrainians. So,
right.
Yeah, so if they're being absconded, they're being hid out. They're not being used yet.
Yeah, somebody's getting quite the stash. I don't know. It's difficult because the longer it goes and the more you hear the same thing, the same thing, the same thing, people start to wonder. And then he's, you know, on the cover of Vogue, and he's on the cover of Time, and blah, blah, blah. And the guys, it's like, wait a minute. You know, we're not looking to make some kind of weird global rock star guy. Like, we'd like to win this thing, be done with it, and get out. But
yeah, and the fundamental issues of corruption are still there.
Yeah, that's the thing.
The same people are at the border shaking things down coming in. They may not be able to shake down our weapons that are flown in directly to the government. I don't know. But it's a corrupt place, no doubt about it.
Yeah.
It's an imperfect democracy.
Yeah. So you look at the amount and the fact that it's never going, you know, that never seems to end. I guess that's the other part of it. And the Biden administration seems to not have any interest in brokering any sort of closure. But
that's
hey,
a problem.
But they, hey, they Christmas is right around the corner.
Some kind of closure.
Yeah.
All right, we have to take a really quick break. And Christmas is right around the corner. So who knows? Maybe we'll get a present for Christmas. I thought I'd play us some fun Christmas music.
On a, but instead, it just kept on raining. A veil of tears for the virgin birth. I remember one Christmas morning, a winter's light and the distant choir, the peal of a bell on that Christmas tree smell, and eyes full of tinsel and fire. I wish you a brave new year. All anguish, pain, and sadness, lead your heart and let your road be clear. They said there'd be snow at Christmas. They said there'd be peace on earth. Hallelujah, Noel, be heaven on earth. The Christmas we get, we deserve.
See, it had a good ending. The Christmas we get, we deserve. I think many decades later, Greg Lake might have been onto something. Maybe Putin will get the Christmas he deserves. It'd be nice if we could help give it to him, though. Hey, so Ambassador, in your article, you talk about the swift banking and seizing assets of Putin and all that. Can you give us a little more? Like, how would that work?
Well, I think we've done a pretty good job of cutting them off, at least with the way the SWIFT banking works. Is that's the network that takes money from one country through other countries and gets it to the destination country, whether it's Europe or U.S. or whatever. And I think we pretty well cut them out of that. I think there's still more things that we could do. And if it were me, I wouldn't do the $60 or 60 euro price. I would just say, uh-uh. No Russian oil goes to Europe. Period. In the paragraph.
Do you think the measures we've taken so far with the SWIFT banking has really punished them much? Because I understand their economy is still doing pretty good.
I don't know how their economy is doing. I think it's hurt them. They've had to go around it. But if we were to cut off all of the oil going to Europe, that would mean that the price would probably go down for China and India, and Saudi Arabia and the Arabs would fill the gap to Europe. That'd be fine. It'd be a good way.
Mm-hmm.
And let them develop their own trading block. We almost have a new Iron Curtain developing between India, to some degree, certainly Iran, and certainly Russia and China. We'll let them have it.
So you think India is on the side of Russia or just a good customer?
India is always India. They're always conflicted, right?
Right.
I mean, going back to Gandhi, they're socialists. They have affinity for Russia. They have not behaved all that great recently. We'll see how they do. But yeah, they have some tendencies towards democracy and capitalism that are pushing them against Russia.
Right. And as far as Russia goes, their only real export is oil, isn't it?
Yeah. That's all they got.
Yeah.
I mean, down in Georgia and Ukraine, you got wheat. But up in Russia, it's pretty much oil.
Right.
Well, now that
we have plenty of that, you know, the United States and Argentina, United States and Colombia make the Western Hemisphere energy independent. And if Biden would stop screwing that up, we could take advantage of it. We were before Biden came in.
Yeah. Yeah. And the fact that and this is none of us I probably will ever know, but what's your guess? Do you think it's just ideology, or do you think they just I mean, you think they just want to collapse us? Is it malicious or just stupid?
Biden?
Yeah.
I think he's become, first of all, this guy was a moderate Democrat for 40 years.
Right.
And he got in office, and he's become a radical captive of the progressive left. And he's done all this strange stuff. It's like, we don't want any fossil fuels. We don't want any pipelines. And none of it makes any sense at all. Because no matter how much you care about alternate energy, and I think alternate energy is a great thing, you're going to have to burn a lot of natural gas and oil for a long time to get there.
Mm-hmm.
The other thing is, how stupid are these environmentalists that they'll say, oh, no pipelines. Indians don't want them or something. Well, the fact of the matter is, we're transporting all of the oil and natural gas by rail cars, which leak methane, pollute, and sometimes even have wrecks. Pipelines don't have any of those problems.
Yeah, and I don't think the Indians are all that much against it now, are they?
Well, maybe the ones they paid, you know, to go up there to those Keystone Pipeline protests who didn't live anywhere near the pipeline.
Yeah. That was kind of an amazing thing. Well, it's kind of like all the people who want to take out the Klamath Dams. Everyone who's invited but the people who live there who voted 79% on an advisory measure not to take the dams out. They didn't invite any of them either. I think it's kind of a standard thing they do.
But there's nothing they can do. There's two things they can't have nothing control over. They have no control over the fact that 90% of our energy is fossil fuels. We can work against it. We can build alternatives, but we're going to have fossil fuels for a long time. So they should embrace that and work constructively to reduce fossil fuels and move to alternates. Okay. The next thing is China and India. Our emissions are down 6% in the last year. China's are up 20. Until we stop China and India from burning coal, we're dropping the bucket.
Yeah. Yep.
And now, with all these disruptions in Europe, guess what's happening? Germany, France, et al.,
yeah.
They're reopening their coal plants.
Yep, they're going back. I think they realize. Yeah. And
they're like, oh, we don't want to really kill our entire population. That's probably not going to go over well.
Oh, their economies
are... The cleanest coal is 7 to 8 times more CO2 and methane-centric than the natural gas. Natural gas is the answer, and we in the United States have more of it than we will ever be able to use. We should be exporting it all over, LNG everywhere.
There's just no sense in what they're doing at all. There's no good. I think what they want to do is they want to replace it and then worry about the cost rather than develop the technology as you go. And replace it, you know, as technology allows. But we're not there yet. I mean, wind and solar is not going to replace fossil fuels without collapsing
so
the economy.
If you said an edict tomorrow, no more combustion engines, all electric, guess what? You're going to have a lot more natural gas-fired electric plants to supply the power for that.
Right.
These guys are toolblock at every step.
Right. Well, they just shut down. What was it? The Jeep Cherokee plant shut down because it's too expensive to make the plant that makes the EVs shut down because they're too expensive to make. I mean,
yeah,
it's that you're going to see that. I mean, that's why Germany is going back to coal. You just can't afford it. The people won't stand for it.
See, and I'll tell you, back in 2002, President Bush, I was involved in this, tried to get Germany focused on LNG as an alternative to Russian gas. And the Schroeder guy wouldn't hear of it. And come to find out, Schroeder, after he leaves being president of Germany, goes on the board of the biggest Russian oil and gas company, Rosneft. You talk about corrupt.
Yeah. Yeah, exactly. That's unbelievable. What do you think about the nitrogen technology that they're playing with now? Do you think that'll ever go anywhere?
I don't know about nitrogen. I know about this green hydrogen.
Hydrogen, excuse me.
Green hydrogen has some real promise.
Yeah. Yeah, that to me makes a lot of sense. I mean, there's mm-hmm. no, basically, the only emission is water, and I think it's fairly cheap to produce, isn't it?
Yeah, they figured out how to make it not so combustible. I think there's a lot of promise.
Yeah. I can't remember which I think it was Japan was kind of leading the charge on that. They were developing some hydrogen vehicles that I don't know, looked pretty good.
Yeah. Could be an alternative to batteries.
Yeah, because the battery thing, I think that's going to come crashing down here pretty quick. We just don't have any of the natural resources required to build batteries.
That's the problem. It takes so many heavy metals that we don't mm-hmm. have.
Yeah, and we don't have
bad
them.
Bad countries do have them.
Mm-hmm.
Well, and then you build them, and you need new batteries, and your car's a throwaway.
Yeah.
I
think the green nitrogen has got a really... or green hydrogen's got a good opportunity.
Yeah, I think so too. And I'm not sure why we're not. If we have to pursue something, let's pursue something that is feasible.
But we're still going to be burning a lot of oil and a lot of natural gas for a long time.
Oh, sure.
We might as well embrace it and get with the program.
Yeah, and that's become such a clean technology after all these years.
I used to be on the board of a company that did a lot of exploration in the Permian, and we used compressed natural gas for our fracking power plants instead of diesel. We recycled all of our water. We basically were a zero emission fracking operation.
Wow. And where was that?
Glasscock County, Permian, in the Permian Basin.
Hmm.
That's kind of interesting. So, while you're watching all this, you're just pulling your hair out.
Well, yeah, because it's so irrational. I mean, we are going to have fossil fuels. Let's figure out how to use them the best way to make transitions to newer technologies. Don't put your head in the sand.
Right.
Because when you put your head in the sand, what do you get? Coal. And coal is super dirty.
Yeah. Yeah, as much as you clean it up, I mean, there's still emissions there.
There is no such thing as clean coal. That is totally a distractive narrative of the coal industry.
Mm-hmm.
Well,
natural gas is much cleaner.
Yeah. Yeah, and why, any sense of why they would have a beef with natural gas other than that it's abundant and it would keep the prices down and they couldn't, roll us on it?
Well, obviously the coal industry doesn't like natural gas because it takes them out. But the liberals seem to... the progressives, if you will, seem to just have this myopic view that we can't have anything. It's zero-sum game. And life is not a zero-sum game.
Right.
Life is a game of increments.
Yeah.
Yeah. And so many of them live in these cities and have no idea where things come from. You know, they don't know where anything comes from. My favorite was a guy from up here. He had lead. He had a big chunk of lead. Just in the ground at his ranch, and they were banning lead. You know, they wanted to ban lead in bullets because it was killing the birds. It's toxic, and so he went down to the Capitol with this big chunk of lead, and went into the guy's office, and he put it down on his desk. And the guy's like, "What's that?" He goes, "It's lead." And the guy like jumps out of his chair. He's a legislator, a grown man, jumps out of his chair. "Well, where'd you get that?" He said, "From my ranch. Comes out of the ground." Where did you think it came from? And the guy actually thought it came from a factory. Obviously, not super familiar with the periodic table. That's how term limits are working for us in California. We're getting obviously smarter and smarter people, obviously, as we cycle them out quicker and quicker.
Well, term limits are the key.
Yeah, well, it's what's giving us people that think lead comes from a factory. So, I don't know. I'm not a fan. We don't have any historical knowledge under the dome and of their head
so
or under the dome of the Capitol.
You and damned if you don't.
Yeah, it's
you
true.
You either have a new person because of term limits that doesn't know anything. You have an old person because of no term limits is so set in and bought off by lobbyists and set into their ideologies that they're not constructive.
Yeah, but then you look at what's the factor that we haven't that we don't touch. And that we can't touch through either of those mechanisms, and that's the bureaucrats. and they're there for 30 years. And that's who's really crushing us. If you look at California policy that's completely crazy, it's the bureaucrats driving it.
It's the same in Washington, D.C.
Yeah, exactly.
They wait out the political people.
Yep, they figure, oh, they'll be gone. So, you know, well, yep, nope. And then that guy will be gone. I can do what I want, which is just, I don't know. I mean, what do you say about that? It's, I think people just really are going to have to do more homework and take a look at.
And we may reach a peak point in this country where our standard of living is starting to decline so much.
Yeah.
That China is about to overtake us.
Yep, and people
that
will.
Europe doesn't really care about us.
Pipe up.
And maybe we'll reach a peak point. I just hope that we do it in a democratic manner with elected people.
Yeah, I hope so too. Ambassador Rooney, thank you so much for spending your Sunday afternoon with us. I'm sure we will speak with you again soon. Have a great time in Florida. Be free.
We got miles to feed. For good.